Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And this week I'm raising a glass or two with a guest who I first met over 25 years ago when he was part of Britain's biggest boy band and sitting pretty at the top of the charts. 25 years on, not much has changed. He's still part of one of Britain's biggest boy bands, still ruling the charts, and yet so much has happened in the meantime. His achievements are astounding. He is something of a Renaissance man whose appetite for reinvention and new experience is as impressive as his songbook. Obsessed with music from an early age, he was already a seasoned performer on the working men's club circuit in the north by the time he joined Take That in 1990, and has gone on to sell over 50 million records, win countless Ivor Novello's, Brits, Q and Enemy Awards. In fact, he's even got an OBE. Soon, he'll reprise his role as a TV talent show judge on Walk the Line, as well as releasing his first Christmas album, The Dream of Christmas. And he's about to head out on tour, playing arenas up and down the country this month and next with the All Hits Live Tour. Away from work, he's a father of three with his wife, Dawn, and they live in London. He's also just brought out his own range of organic wines with Morrison's. So let's crack one open and say hello to Gary Barlow.
Oh,
welcome to the show.
Just stop for a second. That's one of the best I've ever had.
Is it now?
I think it is.
Can we just cut that as a soundbite, please? Thank you.
I think that's one of the... Yeah, it's definitely one of the longest.
You are a Renaissance man. Uh-huh. Because actually, I couldn't fit everything you've done into an intro without it taking up too much of the episode. Mm-hmm. So that speaks volumes about your appetite for life. And the fact that you just, I mean, you exhaust me. We've been talking recently and you are, I mean, you send this man an email, it comes back in seconds. You're on it. You're productive.
It's no hobby, this, you know. It's, do you know what? I do love it. You're absolutely right. I do love it. And I've always loved it. And the excitement and the appetite for moving forward has never left me.
Hasn't, has it?
No, in pretty much everything I do, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm happy about that. I'd hate to be sat here now thinking, oh,
dialing
next
it in.
Next 6 weeks, I've got to go on tour, I've got to bring a record. I mean, imagine feeling like that and having to do it all.
Yeah.
As I really wake up every morning, can't wait to get into the day.
So how did this happen? How did we end up with a bottle of Gary Barlow wine in front of us?
Yeah, this is a new thing. So I get approached all the time for really terrible partnerships. You know, oh, we want to make a mic and put your name on the side. I don't want to do that. You know, I want to make a kid's keyboard and put your name across the back. We don't need to do that. But when this came about, I was like, wine, that's interesting. Because, A, I do love wine. I like it. It's something that I know a little bit about. Not loads, but a little bit. But it also felt like a great partnership for music. Because if you think about my
hand-in-hand
gigs, theatre shows, concerts in the park, picnics, any of those things, it's just lovely.
But it doesn't really tie with the really healthy, super healthy lifestyle that we associate you with.
Well, life's a balance, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad that you like a drink still. That's good.
I do. I've always, you know, within reason. I've got lots of friends who've taken it too far, the whole drink. Mm-hmm. But I've always been okay with drink, and I enjoy it. I love having a night out. I love sharing drinks with people. It's a social thing for me.
So how did it start, and how what was the process, and why Spain actually?
Well, so Benchmark approached me about doing a range.
They're the company that make it.
Led by a great guy called Paul, Australian guy, and they said, right, we think it'd be a great thing for you to have wine. So I was like, okay, well, where do we start? And they were like, well, let's start with the red and white. If we can get the red and white right, that's a good start to a brand. So what you've got to decide early, this is the first thing, as you would imagine, money.
Yeah,
I wanted it to be affordable wine. So all of a sudden, that takes your options to a certain type of grape, a certain way of producing wine. But to me, I added another strand to it. I wanted it to be organic, so I could see them all rolling their eyes. Oh God, here we go. And sustainable. So I want a cheap, good tasting, sustainable organic wine. So initially they were looking about £12 mark, which is too expensive for a bottle of wine, I think. So anyway, we went to work then and we started tasting things. And we'd done maybe 6 or 7 tastings. And they started to report back that they'd actually found some organic vineyards that are sustainable that they think we could get in the price point. So we started tasting those only. And they never told me where they were from. And on about, I don't know, the 20th, because I'm now going, oh my God, how many more of these? I picked the wine and it was Spanish. I would never normally order.
Yeah, I wouldn't. And you very kindly sent some to me at home. I was really, really surprised by how lovely and light it is. White. So, well, yeah, cheers.
Yeah. Yeah, it is nice,
it's
right?
It's really nice. And it's nice. Not just the wine you've been doing. You've got a Christmas album.
Yes.
With the lovely Aled Jones on it. Yeah. Sheridan Smith.
Aled. And so Christmas album started. I'll be honest, I've never really woken up dreaming of having a Christmas album. It's just always something I've not bothered with. But last Christmas, I think, like everyone else, I felt a bit robbed.
Oh, so robbed.
So by Boxing Day, I was
starting... What did you do last Christmas?
Well, we were just sort of at home. And
yeah.
It's funny, though, because actually our Christmas wasn't any different than it would normally be, but we just knew out there we weren't allowed to do anything. And it just brought a big downer on the whole thing. So... Boxing Day, you know that weird time between Boxing Day and New
Twixmas.
Year? There you go. I started going back into the studio and what I didn't realise was I was trying to prolong Christmas through music. And one day just found this little song, The Dream of Christmas, and I liked it and I made a demo and I took it into the label in the new year and I was like, hey, I've got something I like here. What do you think of this? And they were like, that's a Christmas album for next year. So I went about picking songs, writing more songs, doing the thing.
So it's old and new on there, right?
Old and new.
Yeah.
So it's about 70% classics with my twist and then 30% brand new songs, four brand new songs.
And because you're going on the road, I mean, trees are starting to go up. People are so ready for Christmas that you can quite rightly, touring in November, start doing your Christmas songs, can't you, on the road?
I can't remember the last time I toured at this time of year, but the opportunity now to fill it with Christmas is, it's just too tempting.
Yeah, I can't wait for my tree to go up.
Yeah, so we're doing 25 minutes in the middle of the show. It's going to snow. Big Christmas trees, a fireplace. We're doing the whole thing.
Nice.
Yeah, it's going to be nice.
And that takes you all the way to Christmas and then back home with the family.
Yep.
doing Christmas, yeah, I think as I'm it should be done.
Finished at the 21st or something, and then back retreat back home, and then lock the doors. Get the wine out.
Get the wine out, exactly. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the format of the show. It's really simple. Yeah. I ask you three thought-provoking questions. We just punctuate three. Them with three glasses of wine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah?
This wine or yeah. other wine? This wine.
This wine.
So we've got to drink three glasses of this.
Well, I'm not forcing you. I'm not a bully, but, you know. Okay.
Well, it's mid-afternoon.
Christmas starts here.
I guess the questions get easier. After every glass.
Well, you tell me at the end.
Okay.
So my first question to you, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You styled it out in arguably one of the most spectacular fashions I've ever come across when you inadvertently arrived at Buckingham Palace completely ill-prepared for a meeting that you didn't know you were supposed to be pitching mm-hmm. at for the Queen's Jubilee yep. birthday celebrations. You walk into that room full of all of those people and it becomes apparent that you are supposed to stand up and show them how you're going to mark such a massive occasion and you weren't prepared.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, that's right up there with those dreams where you wake up on the train naked, you know, it's the worst kind of fear. So I want to know, when else in life have you had to really style it out?
Yeah, that was a big styling out moment.
That was awful.
You know what was the funny thing of it though? As I was spewing this on.
What did you think you were going there for?
I knew it was to talk about the Diamond Jubilee. But I mean, you know, this is a table full of like dignitaries, the culture secretary. I mean, they were like proper grown ups. And they had like prospectuses with them, not pieces of paper. They had like printed out everything. And worse than that, the first, the private secretary to the Queen, a lady called Sam, said, right, let's start this and let's kick off with you. I was sat next to her. So I was first. I was first up.
And you had nothing.
I had nothing. Well, I did at that point. But as I stood up and started to wander around the table, there was some good stuff coming.
So you riffed it.
Riffed it.
Were you dressed appropriately as well?
No, I was dressed quite nicely.
Yeah, you had all the right.
I had the tackle on, but as the words kept falling out, it was getting better and better.
So what we ended up seeing to mark the Queen's 90th birthday literally just fell out of your mouth in a moment of what, panic?
Do you know what? I'm probably doing myself down here a little bit because obviously when you're put on the spot to give an opinion of something, possibly the thing that you come up with, it's not just rubbish. It's built on quite a few years of putting on concerts and the experience of pulling on. But they were quite good, some of the ideas, until the point where I passed the front window and I went, and the stage should be there, and pointed at the cenotaph. And that's where the gig ended up.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and one of the best things ever is that the weekend before that concert, I was meeting Dawn for dinner, and I got a cab, and the cab came past the back of Buckingham Palace, and the guy said, "Sorry, Garv, I've got to go around the corner. Some twat's put a stage in the middle of the mall." I was like ducking down in the back of the cab. So no, it was fun. It was fun that.
There's the moments that you write about quite extensively in your autobiography about the Grammys party with Clive Davis where he made you perform your own song but he'd remixed it and you hadn't learned the remix.
Yeah, I didn't style that out.
Yeah, I think you did.
I definitely didn't style that one out.
Well, you still got up on stage and gave it a blooming good go.
Yeah.
In front of like Bobby Brown and whoever else was there, Whitney Houston.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think when you do what we do, I think that more often than you realise, you're bloody styling stuff out or all the time. Yeah. Because you know, for me, when I started off for the first like 8-9 years of what I did, all I was doing was playing music and singing. And then when you come to be in the business, you realise that that's about 5% of your whole year is actually doing the music's the easy bit.
Yeah.
It's all the, you know, going on an award show and someone shouts something out the audience and then you've got to answer it. And then, it's all styling out, isn't it? The whole, yeah. Your whole life's kind of ready to style out because...
But you quite like, I sense, not being in situations where you don't know what's coming next. I don't see it freaking you out or panicking you. You always go quite quiet and calm and a bit smirky.
Right.
Would that be a fair observation?
Yeah. Well, the problem I've got is that because of where I came from, I was in the working man's clubs. Mm. So I've seen every comedian. So I've got every comeback line in my back pocket that you could ever need for anybody saying anything. So, yeah, I do get the... I like the thrill of a stage and an audience, and I love all that stuff. But to go back, the styling out thing is something you kind of get used to doing because you have to.
When things go wrong, that's quite often when you come to life, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's when the show starts.
Yeah.
When you have to start turning things like that on.
Turning it around, yeah.
I mean, one of the big styling out moments, which I remember from the 90s, was the night we used to do... I never used to get involved. It was possibly the reason they used to stick me in the middle. But we'd do this song where we'd sort of split off and Rob would throw Jason backwards and he'd land on his feet. And this used to happen every night. But on the other side, Mark used to throw Howard back. And this one particular night, Howard put his foot on Mark and he just slipped through it. And Howard flipped over and he stood up and one of his fingers was pointing the other way.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we're all at the front like, it only takes a minute. So styling it out.
That is, well, respect to Howard.
Yeah.
Did he carry on with a broken
finger?
Well,
he got taken backstage and they give him a towel to bite on while they put it back in. And then all of a sudden we were singing and the lift brought Howard up and he had a big finger. Yeah, it was his middle thing. He had this massive thing around that and he was just smiling like that. I think they're giving him some gas and air. And he was back on.
Happy as Larry.
Yeah.
Gas and air, you see. This is why you stay away from the dance moves, as if possible, yeah?
It's dangerous for everyone involved.
Especially at our age.
I don't think Mark's haven't ever forgiven himself for that.
Does he carry it with him?
Always.
Terrible
guilt.
Still
apologising for it. You know Mark. He apologises for walking in a room. So
she's terribly British, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, my next question for you is based on something I read that you'd written in your autobiography, and I loved it. Oh. You write about how you...
Just the one piece.
That there were a few. There were more than a few. It's a lovely read, by the way. You are a really proud northerner, even though you live here in the south. And you said that, I love this, you revel in your northernness.
Oh, I love it.
And you've said before that being northern is a constant pleasure, which outwardly involves a lot of huffing and puffing. And that if you're a proper northerner, moaning is like a really enjoyable pastime.
Oh, I love moaning.
So let's moan.
It's great.
What's getting you goat? Get it off your chest.
Oh, I love moaning.
Let's do it.
I love moaning about things that are going well.
That's the worst kind of moaning.
This is just, I know, it's brilliant. I love moaning. And as a band, we're bloody great at moaning. We love moaning. Everything. It actually works best moaning internationally, I find. to be in LA.
You're bilingual with moaning.
And go, oh, right, the only thing that's cheap here is fuel then, because everything's extortionate. I mean, it's a great place to moan, like being somewhere where you shouldn't ever moan. It's the best version of it.
If I was to ask your wife and children, what do you moan about the most? What do you think would be on their sort of top five list?
Things of mine at home that I know I put it there. I'm not going to see that now for months. Someone's moved it. Who's moved it and why? They're losing clothes as well. You know, the things just disappear.
You lose clothes.
Those trousers. Where have they gone? I know I'm not going to see them. They're going to end up in Dan's room or he's going to take them off to uni or...
I see he's like the same size as you, so everything's fair game.
Yeah, more or less. He's a little bigger than me, he is. But of course, as they're leaving home, and things, I leave things and they're still in the same place, it kind of makes me a bit sad now. See, I loved them being moved.
Tell me about your experience of raising teenage girls. Is that fun?
Oh, that's different. That's completely different. Yeah. When I walk in through the door, it's like, oh, God, here he is. Yeah, I've had that for years.
Have you?
Yeah. But my saviour sees Daisy. She's 12 and she still thinks I'm great.
Still cute.
Sort of. That's going as well. It's a bit like your son. It sort of does that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
But now that Dan's moved to uni, he's gone to study. How was that, having your first one fly the nest?
Yeah, it was weird, actually. It helps that there's two others, though, still there.
Yeah.
So it made it a little easier. And it makes it easier that he's only in Birmingham because he comes back all the time.
Oh, that's nice and quick. Yeah.
He comes back all the time when he's hungry. He wants his shopping doing.
So you've kind of lost your male ally in the house, really. It's just you and the girls now.
Yeah. I have. But when he's back, it's great. It's great. And sometimes we'll, you know, have a week together, and we try and do something where we go off by ourselves every year, me and Dan. We have an adventure. Yeah.
That's nice. What do you do?
We'll go fishing or...
Do you?
We went to... I did a photography course in Iceland. He came with me on that. And so, yeah, we do fun stuff.
See, that's what I'm talking about when I say you've got an appetite for new adventures and new experiences. I mean, you're a busy man and yet you're taking a photography course in Iceland.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when we went fishing, it was just to be clear, the word fishing, we are a disgrace to that word. We don't know anything about fishing. And we were fishing in British Columbia, you know. We were looking at Alaska, where we were. So these are like, this is like, if you were a fisherman, this is like heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, they shouldn't have let us in, but we were there and we had a magnificent time.
And do you know what you're doing?
No. We had this kid from Vancouver on the boat with us. He was literally pulling them out, putting them in your hand. You had your picture took and then throwing them back in. And it was great. Great.
That's really nice that you get to go off and do that. What else have you had by way of new experiences of late?
Hasn't this all been a bit of a new experience? It really has, hasn't it?
Mm. Well, you mean living through a pandemic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not someone who's prone to down days, really. I try and work my way out of it, but there's been some down times, definitely. Mm. Everyone has.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that's escaped it.
What did you do? Were you able to? Well, you've got a studio at home, so you could still. I would imagine you were productive.
I didn't want to look back on it and go, "Oh, we should have done this, this, and this." I did everything. I did everything, as well as having all the kids at home, which was lovely.
Homeschooling.
Again, Dawn.
Dawn.
She's good. She really is, isn't she? Yeah.
But you know not to interfere when she's at work. Parenting, right? You have to just support her decisions if you leave her to make them.
Yeah, do you know what? We've always tried to be like adult, I guess, about what we're doing. You know, unfortunately my job takes up a lot of time.
I think you're particularly committed.
Yeah.
More than most.
And she gets that I'm not gonna be there.
Yeah.
And just gets on with it. Yeah. Doesn't complain. Doesn't hit me over the head with it. And it's a partnership, I guess.
Probably quite likes that you just go off and do your thing and she can do hers.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think if I just popped round once a week for 10 minutes, it'd suit everyone.
Pop and your daughter would just moan. Oh, God, not him.
Oh, not him again. How long? 9 minutes now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My final question to you, I hope this really gives you food for thought.
Yeah.
I want you to create an emotional medicine cabinet of songs for me. Songs that can soothe, heal, repair, transform or enhance any given emotion. What songs would you put with what mood or emotion in your song medicine cabinet?
Good God. Music moves so quickly that it's just good to be constantly re-inspired. And I have music students who come and work in my studio. And I always say to them, listen,
that's
lesson
nice.
One, listen. It's the first thing that no one thinks about that. Oh, I need to practice for 10 hours a day. I need to get this sound of this. Listen first, because take it all in. You know, we've got everything on that phone. We've got access to 60 years of music. Just get in there and enjoy it and take something from, you know, everything you listen to. So if it was to think of inspiration for a second, I'd have to say the Beatles, because they've never gone out of fashion. Mm. People still reference them now, to this day. Young artists who weren't even thought of when the Beatles were around. Mm. It's a great way to go, here's the bread and butter of what we do.
So which songs do you go to for inspiration, and what is it that they do that really kind of makes their hairs on the back of your neck stand up?
Well, the Beatles is always, when composers and songwriters talk about the Beatles, they would talk about the simplicity, but with a touch of sophistication, and that's the bit. So if you think of a song like Yesterday, which is possibly the greatest pop song ever written, yes, it's very memorable, almost like a nursery rhyme in some parts, but with a touch of sophistication and a twist of darkness.
Real melancholy to that song.
It's a funny one. It's a funny one. And so I'd have to listen to something like that. I mean, continue on to that thing and you listen to something like Imagine, and which is possibly the second greatest pop song ever written.
And the piano so prominent, which is
so
very much
simple.
Your instrument.
So simple. I mean, a 5-year-old could play the way he play, you know, and by then he was probably a very prolific pianist, guitarist, but just to do that simple seesaw, it's just wonderful.
But also, the lyrics, I mean, they are, they've never gone out of fashion or never dated.
Possibly in fashion now, right?
But as pertinent today as the day they were written, and not many songs can do that. As a songwriter, do you envy that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You look with amazement, jealousy, great envy. It's incredible. It's exciting. That's what that is.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a time here where those records, they'd have done that in one take.
Yeah.
You know, not 3 weeks of recording. That'd have been one moment in time right there, and we're still listening to it.
You make a point of recording in the studio that the Beatles recorded a lot of their work in at Abbey Road, don't you?
I just, I just think it's one of those, if you're a music fan, you put it on your bucket list and you go and see that building, because they're still there. The spirits are still in that building. The success and the, you know, the catalogue of the things that have been recorded, even things like Star Wars, and, you know, there's so many iconic moments of music that live still in the walls of that building.
Wait, is that where you do all your strings?
I actually work in all sorts of different places, but I do always ask for Abbey Road first.
You do?
Yeah. You know, when they take your sheet music out, and we're talking about the best musicians in the world here. People travel from all over the world to come to London for these players. They set up with the most amazing mics in the world, some of them 60 years old. They've come from East Germany. I mean, amazing. This is it. This is it, everyone. This is the top right here. And they strike up. And, oh, my God. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
When you wrote your very first song, which was as homework for the BBC Song for Christmas, which is almost quite 360, considering
you've got a
Christmas record out, you said that at the end of that recording session, when they tapped their stands, their music stands, that felt like the greatest applause you'd ever heard at that point, because they were acknowledging your work, other musicians.
Yeah, it's... I think at that point, anyway, I hadn't really had anything I'd composed on show anywhere. So to be in a studio where it was filled with musicians, I'd never done anything.
And you were how old?
15.
15.
So I'd never done anything like that before. And then them all just tapping away. And it was just like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And you know what's funny is that show, we did it at Pebble Mill. Do you remember Pebble Mill?
Yeah.
And guess who was the guest on that show? A young 15-year-old Alad Jones.
No!
Singing Walking in the Air.
Wow.
Philip Schofield was the host, 22 years old. He'd just come over from New Zealand.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a real time that for... But yeah, and funny that here I am with Alad. Yeah, yeah.
Blimey, because that was really seminal for you. That felt like a moment of...
Yeah.
A milestone moment for you, didn't it?
Yeah, because I really... I thought that, you know, just playing piano in clubs and stuff was going to be enough, but it wasn't, because once I'd been and experienced that, I'd seen a new place I wanted to be.
We used to get the train down to London from Cheshire, where you lived, mm-hmm. just to come and look at the record shops in Soho and the music shops and just geek out, really.
Yeah.
Did you do that with friends, or was that just you on your own?
Just me. I used to, so it was two things I used to come down for. It's £4 on the train. The carriages were packed, everyone smoking cigarettes. I mean, it's just what a time to be alive.
And then they'd moan if you open the window.
Oh, so I'm too cold. Exactly. Oh, great. I'll just die then. But I used to come down. I often used to sit in reception at 20 Manchester Square EMI and wait for people to come past. And some days no one had come past. And I used to have a little envelope with songs in.
Aww.
And now and again, someone had come out and go, oh, can I offer you? Oh, don't give it to me. I'm just an accountant here, you know. And now and again, an A&R person had come out and you'd give them a cassette and leave your phone number on it. And
anyone ever call you back?
No, I didn't ever get anything from that. Yeah.
Wow.
But it was good to... sort of be in London, because once it sort of started to close 5 o'clock-ish, I used to go off to Denmark Street then and go into the guitar and keyboard shops. And yeah, it's great. Day out in London.
That's lovely. And you do it on your own?
On my own, yeah. Yeah.
You'd bring a packed lunch?
I did. My mum used to do me a packed lunch for that, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then I'd treat myself at the end of the day to a McDonald's on Tottenham Court Road.
Ooh.
Hello. Here he is. Because I was working at that time, so money wasn't an issue for me. I was working possibly every night of the week, maybe not a Monday or a Tuesday.
Yeah. And you were really business-minded about it as well, weren't you? This wasn't just something you did for a bit of cash on the side. You were building a profile. You were building a block towards the next stage in your career. You knew that you wanted more than that.
I never had any money, because whenever I'd earned money, I'd buy a piece of equipment. I was building a studio. Mm. That's what I was doing. So by the time I gave my demos to Nigel Martin-Smith, who's the manager of Take That,
I remember him
it
well.
It was like 20% off a finished record. I'd learnt it all by that
Well, the demo you gave Nigel, Nigel was a local manager who'd had one hit. He ran a modelling agency.
Yeah.
The demo you gave him included a million love songs, yeah, didn't it?
It did. It did. I gave him six songs. There was a song called Waiting Around on there that I think we did on A Hitman and Her. Remember that?
I do.
It's on at about 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Pete Waterman.
Pete Waterman. Michaela Strachan.
Michaela Strachan. And who else was it? God.
Just, that was it, wasn't it?
Just leaping
two.
Around in nightclubs. And
I
then,
think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jason was one of the dancers on it.
That's right. He was, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was like the main one. So when he joined the group, he was already getting fan mail.
So he had a bit of a profile, more so than any of you.
More so than us. Yeah.
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 Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on that cassette, Nigel had what went on to be your most important hit at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, the love affair with music was deep. I mean, deep. That's, I don't know many 15-year-olds that were working as hard as you and then using their spare time to come to London. And I mean, I could imagine you just standing in the record shops of Soho, just inhaling the smell of vinyl.
Yeah, it was exciting time because obviously at that age, you've got it all ahead of you. And also because I was gigging a lot as well, I was learning, I knew the experience was going to come in handy. The more experience I was getting, the better my voice was starting to sound, the more a song, it sounded better and better. Now and again, I'd slip one of my own songs into a set list, and some nights it wouldn't go down well, some nights it would, and so I was learning about...
But let's just describe the rooms you're playing, right? You're competing with the Bingo and Pies.
Yes.
And Pies, if people don't live north of Birmingham, may not know and understand the importance of Pies.
Yeah.
Because when the Pies arrive, everything stops.
It does.
And when the Bingo comes on, everything stops.
Yeah, there's a terrible phrase that could happen, and it used to happen sort of mid-love song. I'd be doing something where I was just literally had the audience in the palm of my hand, and the concert chairman would walk up and he'd grab the mic and go, "Pies have arrived," and literally every chair in this place just scraped. Oh, God, and everyone would just go and queue up, and
you'd just
be performing to nobody, you know.
What a brilliant apprenticeship, though, because I don't know how aspiring young artists can clock up those miles on the road, so to speak, on stage before they try to land a deal, because everything's different, obviously, but you can build a following online without leaving your home now, let alone getting the train down to London, sitting in the reception of EMI, you know. That's proper dedication.
Yeah, do you know what? As well, I still go by these sort of basics. You've got to get on a stage because at the end of the day, whether you're online or whatever, you've still got to at some point take your music in front of an audience. So the more you learn how to be up there, and the more you become yourself, because obviously the first time you go up there, you're trying to be anyone who's in your head, anyone other than yourself.
Uh-huh.
Who you think you should be, which isn't right. So you learn to be yourself. And the more of those hours you can get in,
they're integral, aren't they?
It makes things easier.
So the Beatles and the Beatles and John Lennon are your go-to songs for inspiration. What about a record that soothes, that heals?
Well, I'd have to go to the greatest year that exists in our time, 1971. Oh, that was the year I was born. Well, there was a record released that definitely got me a piano, and it was called Your Song by Elton John.
Wow.
That's a very soothing record, very complex record, although you can listen to it and just feel soothed.
Yeah.
You don't really need to study it. It's so beautifully recorded and beautifully sung, and the lyrics are so poetic, and they kind of make you not listen to them until you do listen to them, and then you just go, wow, this is the best. You know, Bernie Taupin's lyrics are...
Can you remember the first time you met Elton?
I do.
Yeah,
it was at the Ivor Novello Awards. Yeah,
I was in the room that day. I remember you coming over going, "I've just met Elton John." Yeah. He was so excited.
You know what? Even I must have met him, I don't know, 100 times over the years. I still can't get past that it's Elton John.
Never.
Never. I still can't. Even though he's you know, look, I know him so well that he'll just come and talk about football usually. And I just can't get past it. It's Elton bloody John. You know, it's like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
When his name comes up on your phone, how does that feel? Because I'm imagining he calls you.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I'll he won't mind me saying this, but I did one of those crooner sessions with him.
Yeah.
And
the crooner sessions were what you did online.
Yeah, they were the online thing. So we're all in lockdown. We're all desperate for attention. no one's given us any. Let's get online. We'll find it somewhere, kids. So I made a rule that if they're not in my address book, I'm not going to start ringing agents and record companies. If they're in my address book, I'll contact them. Some people I hadn't spoken to for 5 years or something, but throughout the 90 that we did 90 in the end, I wanted to finish with Elton. So
you did 90?
Did 90, yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I called him up and I said, listen, I know you're probably having some home time with the kids and David, but I've done this thing. He knew all about it. I was like, yeah, I'll do it, you know. So he started this thing then where every morning, it was like 20 past half past nine, I'm guessing the kids had gone off to school or somewhere, FaceTime. And I was like, wow, how are you doing? You know, he went, sorry, I've only just learned how to do this, so I'm doing it to everyone. It was every morning for about 2. What do you think we should do? What do you think we should say? Oh, we'll have a thing and I'll ring you tomorrow. And after 2 weeks, we recorded our pieces. And I said to him, I said, listen, I'm going to miss this. Talking to you every morning, it's just the best start to anyone's day.
Wow.
And like I say, it's always stuff, nothing to do with music. You know, how are Liverpool doing? How's Watford doing? Who are you buying next? It's all the stupid stuff. But it was a very special couple of weeks, that was.
He's also incredibly funny, isn't he?
Oh, he is. Yeah. Most of it you couldn't repeat. But he is. He is. He's funny. You're right. He is. He's like a comedian, actually. You know, he's been a big, big figure for me. And I think with him, you know, he's just a great role model for everyone. I mean, he loves music. Good God.
Oh, his passion for new music is unending, isn't it?
Incredible.
Yeah.
He knows things I've never heard of. And you're just like, wow, how did you even find this?
It's kind of like your Yoda, yeah?
Oh, he is. He's everyone's Yoda, I think. Yeah. Him and Paul, they're everyone's
McCartney.
Yoda. McCartney, yeah.
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 Have you had a similar relationship with Paul McCartney over the years?
I've met him a few times. I've interviewed him, actually.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
How was that?
It was good because he's just so nice, isn't he?
He's dead normal.
You don't feel like
he's like an uncle, isn't he? Like an uncle at a family party. You can just chat. It's quite a gift actually to put people at their ease like that.
You know the bit I love about him, and it might sound bad, this, but it shouldn't do, is that he loves being Paul McCartney, and I like that.
He
loves going. You know, Lady Madonna, bloody hell, everyone's impressed. All the cameramen are all looking. He loves being Paul McCartney. So I've had him on, like, the Diamond Jubilee and stuff. When he does the sound check, he does 40 minutes.
No.
Because everyone's loving it. And he loves them loving it.
Isn't that nice?
And I think that's because a lot of people, like, they're who they are, but then when they're not on the camera, they don't want to be bothered or they don't want to be the one to go and say hello to a table at a restaurant or something. I bet he walks around the whole restaurant saying hello to everyone. Mm. He just loves being Paul McCartney, and it's brilliant.
There's a lesson in that, isn't there?
I think so.
Because you've definitely had years where you've not loved being Gary Barlow.
Definitely, yeah.
And, yeah. You clearly have learnt to love the skin you're in and the life you're in now.
I'm not there, though, where he is.
No one's going to be where a Beatle is.
No, I know.
What about songs that can enhance any other emotion? So, you know, songs that will make you really feel something. Even the compulsion to dance, which I know doesn't happen for you very often.
Oh, you say that.
Oh, really?
Oh. there's one record that I've met the composer a few times. And you just can't deny it. It doesn't matter who you are if it's on, then you're doing something. It right. might be just tapping, or it could be, you know, you're walking across the kitchen to do something.
Doing the dance walk.
Yeah, the dance walk, the dad dance walk. It just makes me smile, and it makes me feel good. It makes me musically feel like this is funky, and it's September by Earth, Wind and Fire.
Oh, such a great record.
See what I mean? It just did it to you. Just
you couldn't not dance to that.
Party song. Yeah. But still a great record. It's not a stupid. It's not a stupid party song. It's a great song. Great record. David Foster wrote it.
Did he?
He did, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, he'll tell you if you meet him.
You've worked with him.
I have, many times. Yeah. Yeah. Good guy. Good guy.
He'll tell you if you meet him.
He will. And well, rightly so.
Exactly.
I'd be bloody telling you if I'd
have
written
it on
that.
A T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote September.
They were a great band, Earth, Wind and Fire.
Oh, my God. So funky. You know, Quincy Jones. I mean, this was a hell of a time. I mean, I knew his daughter for a little bit as well. Know a little bit about the family.
And is it Rashida?
Yes, yeah. So when we were touring with Lulu, she was friends with the family and lots of people that you knew siblings of. Lou would know them, you know. She like introduced us to a whole new level of people, you know. Brought them to the gigs and it is another level, that American thing. It's similar time period, maybe just slightly a little later. One of my favourite ever producer-songwriters is Giorgio Moroder. So Electric Dreams, I mean, you know, I love melody. So when you can bring melody like that, the scales that song goes through, it's beautiful.
It's real handwriting, isn't it? He's got a definite handwriting when it comes to everything that he does.
Yeah.
You know it's him.
In a similar way to, if you think of someone like Rod Temperton, you know, those Michael Jackson records that, you know, Rock With You, and there's so many, Thriller, and, you know, he's a guy from Yorkshire, for God's sake.
Is he really?
I mean, he's sadly dead now, but, you know... If you listen to any of those multi-tracks, there's a track where Rod sang the demo before Michael sang on it. I mean, he's had hundreds of hits. If you Google Rod Temperton, his catalogue's amazing.
Wow.
But Giorgio did it in another area of this sort of European pop, disco, but also that new wave, romantic. It was lighter, but still quite magical. And
unlike anything
and
else at the time.
Yeah, extremely modern. And you know, he's still doing stuff. I think he's done stuff on the new Duran Duran album.
Has he?
So he's still
They've
around.
Worked together before, though, haven't they?
I think so, yeah. So he's still around doing stuff, he is.
Have you ever done anything with him?
I've done anything with him.
Would you like to?
I think so. I mean, I'd have loved to have been there in the 80s when they were doing all that. That must have been... Because for all these people we talk about, Quincy even, they have their decade where they're just... Everything's platinum, six times. But they just... I don't know what that is. It's like a hit confidence that only comes through having records in the charts all the time.
I think you're given permission to keep going and keep experimenting because people are loving what you're doing. You had that.
Yeah.
You know what that is, to drive that, you know, incredible wave of success. You said at one point you used to write a song and hear the applause at the end of it.
Yeah.
Because that's all you'd ever known.
Yeah.
Until you didn't.
It's a funny stamina that you just, I'm going to write a hit, and you do. And it's just like, what?
In terms of the music that you're most proud of creating, are there songs that stand head and shoulders above the others for you in your own catalogue?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think you know when you've written something good. And, you know, some of them mark really important pieces in time for us. It's hard not to think of Back for Good and just think of us at our height. I mean, we were probably in the world at that point. We were the biggest band in the world at that point.
You were? It was nuts, wasn't it?
And it was cool. You know, we were kind of going on Letterman and singing, and it was just brilliant.
The world was your oyster.
Yeah, and then things like Patience, where without that song, I don't know if I don't know what would have happened after that, really. And, you know, we were back, but we were just doing concerts. But that song, like, suddenly we're in the charts again, you know.
It wasn't just a song in the charts, though, was it? Because anything you did at that point would have got in the charts. It was about the quality and the brilliance of that pop record. It was it's a brilliant pop record.
I was proud of that. Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. And I remember at the time when we made that album, I hadn't actually sung into a microphone for about 8 years. At that point, it'd been a long time.
That makes me so sad to think that you didn't sing, because it's like breathing for you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really
sad.
It
was weird. And it was a big missing piece of me. Mm. I could feel it.
Could you?
Yeah, I could feel it.
Yeah, I mean, you had a studio at home. There was clearly no compulsion to sing. Quite the opposite. You just didn't want to.
Yeah, I didn't want to. Didn't like the way my voice sounded. I didn't like the relationship with singing, because it reminded me of being in front of people, which at that point I hoped I never would be again. Because I just, you know, all of this stuff, it's all in your head, all this stuff. And so, because it's in there, you can't escape it. So it was a very, very odd time, very odd time. And so when we talk about tracks like Patience, you know, that's the whole me. That's me back as a whole. I remember being on stage one night around that period. And because it was, you know, it was a bit of a scramble getting everyone back. It may have looked much better planned than it actually was.
It looked like a masterstroke.
Didn't it? But it wasn't. Not really. No. We all just sort of followed where it was going and tried to hold on, and we seemed to somehow. But I remember being, it was somewhere crazy, like the Etihad Stadium or something. And, you know, these gigs, the enormity, it's only what you're seeing, because, you know, in my head, I've got these ear things in, which means you've just got your ear pods in, really.
Yes, yeah, so for people listening at home, you don't hear the audience. I was going to say the room, but you're in a stadium.
They try to feed it into your ears, but it's still just a noise, you know. And you're looking, and your senses are telling you I'm in this massive place. But I remember being stood out the front and I was singing, and I just thought, oh, I love singing. I forgot how much I love singing. It was that. Sometimes it's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, just singing something you love to do. You do it when you're painting or in the shower, or it's lovely to sing, to emote, to express. It's part of my voice. You know, it's part of my conversation. And
so, if you weren't singing, did that mean that music was completely gone from your house, your home, your life?
No, I was doing music at that time. I had one of my best friends, Elliot, was dragging me through a few years by giving me work, really. You know, come and help us with this. I didn't
so
really
Elliot
want
to,
was
but a songwriter that wrote Everything Changes With You.
Yeah, yeah.
But he'd also had big success with the Spice Girls.
Yeah, he's had loads of hits over the years. Bryan Adams and Celine Dion, Aretha Franklin. I mean, he's written for everybody.
And what a lovely bloke as well.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best. You just want to be with him.
So unassuming. What a lovely guy.
Yeah, the best. And also someone who recognised, without saying, by the way, this guy needs help here. So, hey, you know, without saying, I'm going to give you help. Come and help us. Hey, guys, quick, just write a bit on this. I'm stuck with this bit. I knew he wasn't. He could write this. All right, well, give it here. I'll do this. There you go. Off you go. Brilliant. Thanks for that. Next day. Give us a bit of this on the... You know, he dragged me through a few years, just throwing me a bit of this and that. And
musical CPR.
Nice. Yeah, musical CPR, yeah. Yeah. That was lovely.
Yeah.
That was nice. Got me out the house a bit. But I didn't do much. I didn't do much in those years.
But then when you did, that muscle memory must have been fantastic for you to be able to write Patience.
That was all of us in a room with John Shanks, that was.
Right.
But... I mean, listen, I don't know where these songs come from, but, you know, all those things we talked about earlier, all those nights in those clubs, all those days in record labels, at some point, all of that stuff's going to bubble up inside and just go, and they're the moments when it does, when you need it, when you need it, when you need to style something out, you know, when you, that's when you're pulling on all those times where you've done it before. Mm. You've had to do it before and
pulling those levers again.
Yeah. All those things where I'm always the one that says, you know, music doesn't qualify you for anything. Well, you know, you sort of, you build up your own version of you know, whether I was sat doing that TV show the other night and I couldn't think of what to say. So you just say what you feel, and what you feel is actually quite interesting because you've been around music for years and it's just that, really.
This is the new show that you're doing, Walk the Line. And you're right, it's not about being fed lines by show writers, which is very much the American model. It's just going, well, yeah, you're absolutely right, just responding in the moment. There's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and with anything, especially with music, it's only your angle you see it from, you know, because that's why the record shop's full of music, because everyone's got different tastes.
If I could put one song in your medicine cabinet of songs,
love this
one or two
cabinet business.
It's good, isn't it?
It's great.
We should do this. There's a great covers album in this, I think. I want to know about the songs that you wish you'd written. Just the ones that you just go.
How long have you got?
Well, let's go.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, there's
like pure envy.
So many. Pure envy. Let's have a think about this. I mean, you know, when you think of songs like Billie Jean, I mean, that changes everything.
Just the beat.
The whole world's changed when that gets released.
You forget, I mean, God, you've got to be our age to understand what that felt like when that came out, because it sounded like nothing else, didn't it?
Well, it was like someone had flown it in from another planet.
Yeah.
They changed the world, those songs.
Yeah.
You know, think of things like Soul to Soul, Keep on Moving. That changed. Ah. All of a sudden, music has gone in another direction.
That was the sound of 89, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's 89.
It was the end of the 80s, definitely.
Didn't that sound, again, like nothing you'd ever heard before?
It was being beamed in from Mars.
But also what that record did for me, Club Classics Volume 1, I mean, I've still got it. I've still got it on a CD somewhere. Yeah. I haven't even got a CD player. What that then made me do was look into other artists. It inspired me to then start digging around in the past rather than just listening to current music.
Right.
And so I think that's always really important, those artists or those albums or records that are gateways to other places musically.
Yeah. And also when they're written, those songs, people hear it, they're affected by it, and they give it another life then by doing their version of what they've been in. That's how music works, really.
So which of these Soul to Soul songs did you say? Keep on moving.
Yeah. Brilliant tune.
Isn't it?
Brilliant
tune. And the video, so simple.
Fabulous.
But made you want to be on that rooftop dancing.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Wonderwall, Oasis.
Really?
A brilliant song. You don't even need to define what... Because people go pop, rock, these songs, you don't think Billie Jean, but it doesn't have a genre.
That doesn't, no.
No, it doesn't. I don't think Wonderwall does. I don't think, there's so many songs that just don't have genres because they're just great songs.
Great pop records,
yeah.
And there's no shame in that. I don't know when pop became like a dirty word. It was something I was railed against it when I edited Smash Hits. I just wanted to celebrate pop because it's an abbreviation of popular.
Yeah.
Which means you're doing something right.
Yeah.
Because the masses like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite simple when you work it back. Okay, Wonderwall. Anything else?
Things like Sleeping Satellite, Tasmin Archer.
Really?
What a song.
Really? That's come from
what
nowhere?
A song that is. Yeah.
Wow. Quite like to hear you cover that.
Yeah, I do it now and again in karaoke.
do you?
It's always a favourite of mine. Everyone sort of sits there going, do you remember this? I don't remember this. Do you remember it?
Thank you so much for coming in. Excellent. And chatting and sharing some wine. And good luck with the tour and good luck with the album.
Thank you.
It's so nice to see you.
Thank you very much. And lovely to see you. God bless
good
you.
Good health.
God
you
bless
too.
You. Have a nice Christmas.
Merry Christmas. This episode of White Wine Question Time has been produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Gabriella Colasurdo and Richard Hatherall for Yahoo. Libby Knowles is in charge of editing. Andy Bell is taking care of the beats, and the Yahoo Studios team have helped to bring it all together. We'll be back next Friday with more great guests. Until then, take care out there.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.